Thank you all for staying or coming. Dr. John Hamry, who is president and CEO of CSIS, unfortunately had to be overseas, and he regrets not being here today. He asked me to extend his warmest welcome to you, Secretary Napolitano, and to you, our audience. It's my pleasure now to introduce to you someone who really needs no introduction, Janet Napolitano. Secretary Napolitano is only the third person to serve as Secretary of the Department of Homeland Security and the first woman in that position. She was the 21st governor of Arizona from 2003 to 2009, the third female governor, and the first to win re-election. Prior to her election as governor, she was the first woman and the 23rd person to serve as Attorney General of Arizona. With more than 200,000 employees, DHS is the third largest cabinet department and also the most recently established only 10 years ago. Since its inception, DHS has had to evolve quickly to fulfill its mission of securing the United States against terrorism and other threats. Leading the department requires extraordinary courage, vision, and dedication. Secretary Napolitano is not only an exemplary leader, she's helping to shape the culture and workforce of one of our most important governmental bodies. DHS, of course, plays an instrumental role in cybersecurity, and Secretary Napolitano has been a leader who truly understands the importance of workforce development and diversity in all homeland security areas, including cyber. In June of this year, Secretary Napolitano announced that DHS will launch a task force focused on cyber workforce development. This is part of her ongoing efforts to work with universities, public and private organizations, and interagency counterparts on this issue. We look forward to hearing more about this and how DHS will be approaching diversity in the workforce, with particular attention to the recruitment, retention, and advancement of women. Thank you, Secretary Napolitano, for being here today.
Thank you. Well, good morning. Thank you, Linda. It's a pleasure to be here and see all of you to talk about something that I have a real passion for, and that is cybersecurity, and how we make sure that we have the workforce we need to protect the country. Linda, I really appreciate you and CSIS and Women in International Security for hosting this event and for inviting me to be your keynote speaker. I don't have to repeat something we all know, but so I'm going to repeat it anyway, and that is cyber is now interwoven into the fabric of our everyday life. It's how we do our business. It's how we shop for many of us. It's how we communicate with others. And so even as that happens, we realize that both domestically and internationally, we're part of an interconnected world in a fundamentally different way than had existed previously. So there's so much good that comes out of that, out of the internet, the freedom of the internet, all the capacity and capabilities that that provides. But as in so many things, there's a flip side. And the flip side is what I see on a regular basis. And that is that the number of attacks on cyber and cyber infrastructure has increased exponentially in the 4 years, roughly, that I have been secretary. Not only by number, but also in sophistication. In terms of attribution, some are just hackers or hacktivists, as they're called. Some are organized groups. Some may even be nation-state related. But this is an ongoing theater for us, and one that is of paramount importance. We see a lot of what I would call traditional crimes, crimes that used to occur before the internet, now being facilitated through cyber, child exploitation, child pornography, human trafficking, fraud of all types, counterfeiting of all types is aided on the internet. But what we also see, and that is perhaps the most significant in terms of our responsibilities is that the attacks on the nation's core critical infrastructure have become more severe and more numerous. When we say core critical infrastructure, it's the infrastructure on which other businesses rely, households rely, communities rely. It's the financial sector. It's telecommunications. It is power, electricity, water, and the like, all involving critical infrastructure, all with cyber capabilities and cyber failures, quite frankly. So we have a lot of work to do in this area to make sure that the homeland remains as safe as possible. Specifically, at DHS, we're responsible for securing the civilian side of the federal government, the .gov universe. And we have a variety of new and innovative technologies that we are deploying to do that and to secure those government networks. We use risk assessment, mitigation, incident response capabilities that have been elevated over the past few years. To do this requires, obviously, a cyber workforce, a workforce that is comprised of qualified, highly skilled, highly motivated, and innovative employees who represent as well the diversity of the United States. And so let me talk a minute about that. Now, as Linda mentioned, I have had the privilege of working with many talented women in the field of security, in the field of law enforcement, and in public service during the course of my own career. And to be sure, I've seen a lot of progress to create greater opportunities for women to excel at the highest levels of government and of national security. I served as an attorney general. I was one of half a dozen female attorney generals in the country. I was a two-term governor, and of course, the third and first female Secretary of Homeland Security. Now, there have only been three of us, so that's a little bit of a stretch, but I'll say it anyway. But here's a little bit of perspective. When I was born, which wasn't that long ago, when I was born, there had been a total of two women cabinet secretaries in U.S. history, and it was inconceivable that a woman could lead a department that deals with national security. But today, many women are serving in senior national security and law enforcement roles, and there are actually seven women in the cabinet in President Obama's administration. It's not parity, far from it, but it is significant progress. And at the Department of Homeland Security, I actually think we're helping to lead the way in this area, particularly women involved in cyber-related work. So let me, if I might, just give you a little bit of a list. We have Suzanne Spaulding, who is our Deputy Undersecretary for National Protection and Programs, otherwise known as NPPD. Does a huge amount of work in cyber. Caitlin Durkovich is the Assistant Secretary for Infrastructure Protection, infrastructure cyber intrinsically related. Bobby Stemfley is our Deputy Assistant Secretary for Cybersecurity Communications. Rosemary Wenschel, who's the Deputy Assistant Secretary for Cybersecurity Coordination. She was on the panel, I think, earlier this morning, so you've heard from her there. And Christina Dorviel, who's the program director for a campaign we aim at younger people called Stop, Think, Connect, trying to get youngsters to be cognizant of their surroundings on cyber and what their own responsibilities are. So that's in the cyber world. And then across the department, more generally, we have senior leaders who are women. The number two at the department, the Deputy Secretary, Jane Hall Lute, came to DHS after a career in the military and with the UN peacekeeping forces. She is playing a critical role in helping our overall management of cybersecurity. Dr. Tara O'Toole is our Undersecretary for Science and Technology. She is helping us in our work to develop new cyber-related technologies, including a successful initiative to develop and deploy some very innovative secure internet protocols. And Karen Wagner is our Undersecretary for Intelligence and Analysis, INA, as we call it. She's leading the work with respect to intelligence and information sharing, and obviously that is critical to the effectiveness of our cyber work. So we're proud of these leaders. I'm proud of these leaders. But we know that there's more that we need to do to actually build a world-class cybersecurity team at the Department of Homeland Security. We need a dependable pipeline for the future for engineers, scientists, analysts, IT specialists, you name it. And that's why we have embarked on a very concentrated effort to develop the next generation of leaders in cybersecurity, and trying to foster an environment for our talented staff to grow in this field and to see their career path at the department and its important role in securing the networks of the United States. Part of this has just been a growth in numbers. We have now grown our cybersecurity staff 600% in the last few years, and we are working very closely with universities to develop and attract talent. We have competitive scholarships, fellowships, internship programs, and I will say it is a new department. We're not yet 10 years old. In terms of government institutions, we are an infant, but we are an infant that needs to walk and run right now. So we can't take the normal steps. So everything we're doing, we're trying to accelerate. There's a sense of urgency here that is so very important. Last year, we created a pilot program with the Naval Postgraduate School in Monterey for our employees to earn their Master's of Science in Cyber Systems and Operations via distance learning. So they can be here and be taking coursework in Monterey. Or I guess they can go to Monterey, which is a very nice place. But that flexibility is there. And we're looking for other ways to be flexible, to make sure that the workplace environment is one that encourages our employees to give us their very best efforts, but realizing that flexibility, creativity, innovation are part and parcel, particularly in the cybersecurity arena. Working with the NSA, and we work very closely with the NSA, we are trying to strengthen the nation's educational infrastructure, supporting centers of academic excellence across the country. The centers and the idea behind the centers is to help cultivate a growing number of professionals, particularly with expertise in cyber. As of May of 2012, we had 145 institutions, or 145 programs, I should say, at colleges and universities who have been designated as centers, which is a competitive designation that must be earned. And then, of course, we are also working with the National Initiative for Cybersecurity Education, NICE, to include public as well as students all the way from kindergarten through postgraduate school. And let me just pause a moment there. We know that in the United States, we simply need to grow and have more students who have competencies in the fields of mathematics and engineering and cyber, the so-called STEM coursework. This has been a big part of the Department of Education's race to the top. It's been part of the U.S. Cyber Challenge, which works with the private sector and academia to identify young cyber talent. And it is something that we need to think of not just as a DHS issue, but as a United States writ large issue. We simply are not producing enough young people who are or have expertise in these fields. We're not fostering their interest in these fields, and that's particularly true where young women are concerned. So we are really working with academic institutions and others to see what we can do in this area. We have been reaching out to the private sector. Not everyone wants to come work for the government. Go figure. What we have found is that we can have, with appropriate clearances and the like, a loaned executive program. And we are now getting executives loaned to us from some of the nation's larger corporations. They spend time with us a year, 2 years, and they get a sense of all of the varied missions within the department, how it works, and we get a sense of what they are working on in the private sector. So it's really a cross-pollinization exercise, and I think it's been very successful. It's somewhat new, but I see it only growing. And then lastly, yesterday I announced our newest recruitment initiative, and that's a Secretary's Honors Program. This is designed to capture recent college graduates through a competitive process. We've scoped it to 50 young people, but what we want to do, they will come in, they will be given special mentorship, special projects, really see the upper reaches of the department in terms of leadership. But it's our effort to really identify early on young people who have dedication, leadership skills, motivation, and make sure they are incorporated quickly and at an elevated level within the Department of Homeland Security. You can go to DHS.gov. I see some young people in the audience. DHS.gov, we posted yesterday some of the details about the new honors program. So we're looking for our first 50 secretarial honors participants. And then I did mention very briefly Stop, Think, Connect. I only mention that because, as I said before, a lot of this has to start early. You got to get young people involved, interested. They have to have competencies in the STEM fields, and there are a lot of different ways to do that. So Stop, Think, Connect, that's kind of situational awareness about your own cybersecurity. But in terms of encouraging particularly girls and young women to start on the path, we have some very interesting programs underway that people don't normally think of DHS in respect to. For example, we have a program with the Girl Scouts. There's a badge, and we have been helping educate their 3.2 million members on cybersecurity and the like. It may seem like a kind of a niche thing to do, but think of that, 3.2 million young girls exposed, getting to come in and see a lab, do some work, get interested in the field. That's a big deal. And we can inspire, I think, girls and young women that way and find mentors for them and help them get into these fields. And we are very interested in doing that. We know, according to the Department of Commerce, that women fill close to one half of all jobs in the United States. Makes sense. But we hold less than 25% of the STEM-related jobs. And quite frankly, we hold an even smaller percentage of leadership positions within the STEM-related field. We know as well that the STEM-related fields are the ones that are going to be growing in the next years, in the next decade. So it really falls upon us to take this challenge up and to say, look, we want to make sure that girls, young women, recent college graduates really have the opportunity to come into DHS or into other interesting areas to work on cybersecurity. It's in the national interest. It's fascinating work. It's of the utmost importance, and it's one of our paramount initiatives within DHS. I think I'm looking at the audience now, and I see some people taking notes and this and that. And I just want to close with this. DHS is a young department, 9 years old, 240,000 employees strong. We're responsible for counterterrorism. We're responsible for air, land, and sea border security. We're responsible for immigration enforcement. We're responsible for disaster preparation and response, and we have huge responsibilities for preserving and protecting cyberspace so it can continue to be the engine that we know it to be and produce the good that we know it can produce. We can't do that by ourselves. We need partnerships. We need reach out, private sector, academia, as I already mentioned, and we need a greater public awareness of what the role of DHS is and how it occupies the space that is the non-military space where cyber is concerned. You can help be communicators as well. I encourage you to do that, and if any of you are interested and you think that fulfilling a career where you are not only doing creative and important work, but helping to protect the United States, that's where you want to be, talk to us after the program. All right. Thank you very much. Let's take some questions.
Thank you all for sending your questions in. I've been given several of them to ask the Secretary, and thank you, Secretary Napolitano, for your thoughtful comments and making us even more aware of the scope of DHS's responsibility. It's daunting, and it's the kind of thing that I'm sure keeps you up at night. Lets us rest a little easier, but keeps you awake. First question is this. This morning, we spoke a lot about providing young women with exposure to cyber careers. What role does or should DHS play in facilitating this exposure to cyber careers at DHS and the entire civilian community?
I think a couple of things, and I mentioned a few of them in my talk. One is just pure outreach, writing about what DHS is all about. I think this is an ideal place for internships as well. There's nothing for a young person, perhaps more illustrative of a career than being able to spend, you know, a few months working in an office, properly supervised, given some interesting work, and getting to get a sense of the place, what it would really be like to work there. So one of the things we've been focusing on is actually growing our internship program. You know, for a new department, when I started, and I think Secretary Ridge and Secretary Chertoff would concur, I mean, the first thing to do was get the lights turned on and, get some stationery and get started. And Tom Ridge had to do that. That's yeoman's work. Secretary Chertoff actually had to start integrating all of the 22 different agencies that represent DHS into a whole and did wonderful work in that area. But now we're really at, I would call, DHS 2.0. And now we're layering in, okay, what's our workforce of the future? What are we doing? So internships, fellowships, scholarships, the honors program, all designed to help bring young people into the department, and particularly, if I might say so, young women.
How extensive is your internship program in terms of numbers?
It is... I don't know if I have an exact number on it, but it's probably 700 to 900 in there. And then different places around the country, too. While it's mostly D.C.-focused, remember, we're in 50 states and the territories and 75 countries around the world. So we have huge outreach in terms of our responsibilities.
Thank you. The second question. 3 years ago, you announced an initiative to hire 1,000 cybersecurity professionals in DHS. How is the department doing against this initiative?
We're doing well, but it's not as fast as I want it to be. And so that's why last spring I commissioned a special group task force to really look at our cybersecurity workforce, what we really needed, what their skills needed to be, and how we certified those skills, and how we did on the job or professional development for people who had come to work for us. They produced a very thorough and excellent task force report, which I received about 6 weeks ago. We are now in the process of implementing that on a 30, 60, 90-day schedule. It'll take us into 2013, but I think that puts some concrete benchmarks down in terms of what we actually need to do to have people not just in cyber, that's a very broad area, but really focus down on what exact functions and skill sets must our employees be able to execute. So the report is public. It's probably posted, it's probably available at DHS.gov. They did a wonderful job, and so that's really going to be our roadmap for the next couple of years.
Thank you. The third question: it seems that there is a finite amount of information about what is going on in cybersecurity at the unclassified level. What suggestion do you have for people who want to continue learning and growing in this area in their current capacities?
For those who don't have access to classified information?
Yes, yes.
I think there is a terrific amount of information available at the unclass level, and it just requires some excavation to get to some of it. So there is a lot out there. And I think there's enough out there to indicate the seriousness of this issue, the growth of number and sophistication, as I mentioned, in this issue, and what some of our needs are. So I would encourage people just to read all the unclass products they can, and actually, there's some tradition. There's some media that actually is pretty good on this.
Thank you. The next question: women's participation often gets classified as a women's issue, and is afforded lower priority than other policy goals. With the upcoming changes in the executive branch post-election, how do you suggest that a real and lasting focus on diversity and women's participation be institutionalized longer term?
Well, I would begin by saying I don't think it's a women's issue. I think it's a workforce issue, and making sure that we are not somehow cutting ourselves off from 50% of the workforce because we're not working with that population. And that, as I mentioned earlier, begins early on, not just when they are already out of school. So it is a workforce issue, and you can have all the written policies you want, and we have good policies. The trick is the commitment to executing the policies, not just the letter, but also the spirit that underlies them. And that requires commitment from the top. So we are very committed to this. We think it important to make sure DHS gets the best workforce available, and we're going to continue to do so. As we move into the second term, I think you'll see more and more of this institutionalized.
This next question follows nicely with the last question and asks, this questioner asks, does DHS have any special processes it uses to ensure the impact of diversity, not just its numbers and appearance? Do different thinkers get a hearing at DHS? That's a loaded question, that last one.
Some would say we all think differently at DHS. Yes. I think that we put a premium on innovation and creativity. I mean, the fields that we are in, the things that we are doing, are oftentimes have never been done before, they are some things are very complicated and complex, we don't have the luxury of doing things as they've always been done. The threats evolve, the technology evolves. The attacks evolve, so we have to continually evolve and challenge ourselves. And I continually challenge our workforce not to get into a rut, which, you know, is a temptation at any job, private sector or public sector. But we have to continue to build our own capacities, and we have to, within that, make sure that we create an environment and maintain an environment that rewards innovation and creativity.
Thank you. This questioner asks, which area of cybersecurity faces the greatest number of threats in the coming year? Is it a threat from malware, worms, hacking, or something else?
Yes. I'm only being half facetious. It really is all of the above. But the area that I am concerned about most is the area of our core critical infrastructure, because I think that's where vulnerabilities can be exploited, and that would have a direct impact on the safety and security of the American people and on the economic health of our country. So in terms of what we focus on, we do criminal investigations of the so-called traditional crimes. The Secret Service does a lot of that. Secret Service, particularly where financial institutions are involved, and we do a lot in the child exploitation and pornography area, particularly through ICE, and in the intellectual property protection area. But it is within NPPD where we have the greatest security-related work in the sense of protection, outreach to the private sector, which owns much of our most of our critical infrastructure, and outreach to the other agencies of the federal government. And if you ask me, what concerns me the most is that in an interconnected world where infrastructure is concerned, you can have entities that are doing a really good job, but it only takes one or two to create a gap in the system, and then the gap can have a domino effect. That's why having legislation, I think, in the end is going to be absolutely necessary to make sure we have kind of a set of uniformity of best practices and things that are incorporated within the core infrastructure of the country.
Well, let's broaden that thought a little bit with the next question. The question is, can you speak to our United States cooperative efforts with our international allies and partners for cybersecurity?
Yeah, this, I think, is really in its nascent stages. But what's challenging about cybersecurity, first of all, it is inherently international. It respects no national boundaries. Second, there are really no international protocols or framework on which to hang things. Thirdly, there's a wide disparity in technological capacity among different countries. So it's really an area that requires a lot of work. But the plain fact of the matter is we have to work internationally here. And work very closely with our allies here. We are using some of the existing international structures that we participate in, the Justice and Home Affairs dialogue, the so-called Five Eyes, the US-EU Cyber Task Force. I think they call it a task force. But I would have to say that this is one area where there will need to be a lot of work over the next, months and years. It is not well developed yet.
What is the status of the cybersecurity executive order the White House is working on, and when will it be issued?
There has been work on an EO in light of the failure of the Congress to be able to pass legislation this past year, in part because we recognize that, given the severity and urgency of the situation, we can't simply wait if Congress cannot act. So there is a draft. It has been circulated. But the president has not had the opportunity to review it or make a final decision about it. One of the things that's happening now is outreach into the private sector and other stakeholders to kind of look at it and get some feedback before any EO would be issued, if there is ultimately that decision to go by executive order. In the meantime, the Senate Majority Leader, Senator Reid, has indicated that he is very interested in trying again in cyber. We'll have to wait and see when the Congress comes back on the 13th of November. They've got a long list of things that need to be dealt with. My hope, the ideal way to go is through Congress. But if Congress cannot act, then the executive branch is going to have to.
And this will be our last question, Secretary Napolitano, and it is, in order to create diversity in the cyber pipeline, you need to build a pipeline of talent with STEM education. What is DHS doing to increase STEM enrollment and interest by our middle school and high school students, and especially girls? What programs and funding exists to support these grants?
Groups like the Girl Scouts and other areas. It's working with the Centers of Excellence in terms of their recruitment of students into their programs. So it is a range of things. I know that the Department of Education under Secretary Duncan is very committed to STEM education. We all recognize, and I think all of us in this room can recognize, that the United States must have a STEM-savvy, cyber-savvy workforce moving forward if we are to maintain our economic place in the world and, you know, really be an economy that survives and thrives. So we all have a vested interest in making sure this happens. And again, we can't let 52% of the population slide and not get them incentivized, recruited, and educated in these areas.
Thank you, Secretary Napolitano, for giving us so much time today and being willing to field so many questions. We really appreciate all of it.
You bet. Thank you all.
Thank you, everyone. I wanted to just offer a last thanks on behalf of WISE, CSIS, and Deloitte for all of you for attending today. I think we just started to scratch the surface on this topic in our panel this morning, and WISE certainly hopes that we can be a forum and a facilitator to continue to draw together the stakeholders to talk about what we must all do together to move forward on encouraging, inspiring, retaining, and supporting the advancement of women in the STEM and the cybersecurity areas. And so one last point as you're walking out, if you are not engaged with WISE, if you're not on our list, please do get on our list. There's a sign-up sheet. We'd love to have you all in our community as experts and contributors to this important issue and many others concerning women in international security. Thank you.